Fashion Tech Applied is published. My co-authored book taking you through 6 chapters and covering the technologies and innovations powering the fashion industry. I'm Peter Jun Ho Sang, founder and CEO of Beyond Form, and welcome to the special podcast series Applied. Each episode, I'll be sitting down with incredible fashion tech professionals that are featured inside the book. On today's episode, I'm sitting down with my co-author, Von Rezive, which some of you listening will know has been on the podcast previously. We're so excited to be launching this book after 18 months of hard work, researching, interviewing, writing, and toying around with fashion technologies. We'll be going through what to expect in each chapter of the book and some of the personal highlights that we've enjoyed exploring and writing.
These are the ones we do really believe in. They're not any different from actually what we have written before that. It's really just looking at the technologies in the different scenarios and pinpointing those. So I'll let you guys take the book and read that for yourselves. I think that's one of the main takeaways, that some of them are a little bit more like must-haves compared to some that are just nice to have, basically.
Let's get stuck into the conversation with myself and Von, officially launching our book on this episode of Venturing Into Fashion Tech. How are you today, Von? We finally launched the book.
Yeah. Oh, I'm good, thanks. It's been a while, but yeah, it's finally done. It's been a year and a half that we've been doing this now, actually. At some point it looked like we wouldn't finish, but we did.
We did. It was such a long journey. We started talking about the book in March 2022, and we published it now, actually, at the end of 2023. So it has been quite a while, shall we say, since we first conceptualized what we were going to write about. What's been happening with you then, Von?
Yeah, so since then, I did continue with some partnerships that I've been doing with IFA Paris, specifically with teaching technology with the students, which is something that we are covering in the book as well, about the importance, obviously, of the next generation of fashion designers actually knowing about tech. It's really just been a bit of that, but also separately looking at other ways to kind of have those kind of partnerships with different brands in terms of consultation. And also just my own brand, where I've been looking at innovation with a clothing brand that is fit for people with disabilities as well. So I'm going to be taking all of that now from Paris and taking that to the US now, because actually I do think there's a lot of opportunity there as well.
Which is super exciting. So hopefully you'll be doing the book tour in America for any American listeners.
Yes. Yeah, actually, well, our publisher, they've got a branch in New York as well. So yeah, hopefully we can do some stuff there.
So we do have quite a lot of listeners in America. So anybody that wants to meet Von when she's there, I'm guessing hit her up and she can give you a signed copy.
Exactly, yeah. We should do like a full-on book signing and do like our tour. Because actually between us, we've now got, you know, England, France, and the US now. So I think that's a pretty good thing.
But Von, for our listeners, I'm going to give you the pleasure of announcing what is the book called and what it's about.
Yeah, so if you haven't known about our journey so far writing this book, we have been writing the book Fashion Tech Applied. And this book is literally all about the fashion value chain from production all the way to retail marketing, and really just focusing on the technologies that we can use across all of that, really across that whole chain. So we're focusing really on the different brands that have actually done this stuff so far in terms of AI, AR, VR. We're kind of covering the whole lot, and then how we can then really just make fashion more efficient, more sustainable, all that good stuff, really just to innovate that whole chain.
Absolutely. And for anybody that's interested in buying or purchasing the book, we're going to put our links with the episode notes on our respective podcast platforms. And also there'll be some information on our websites and, of course, LinkedIn as well. So go hunting for some information. It's so exciting to be able just to talk about what we have been doing over the last few years. And obviously, Ron, you have been part of that as part of Beyond Form as well. And obviously, we found your power by IFA Paris and IFA Paris and the courses there, that we've been able to just, I guess, populate all of our learnings and people that we've met and key insights, good and bad, actually, into this. But I think that's what has been like quite lethargic for me in the writing process. And the book itself is probably only one snapshot of everything that we have learned. And I think you will agree with this, but I think we could have written a lot more than we did do.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. Because I remember when it was done and then we kind of, you know, gave it in to the publishers. And I'm thinking, yeah, actually, you know, we covered a lot, but I know that there's even more that's even happening after we finish writing, and it's always going to keep going. So maybe future editions. But no, I think, it just shows you as well the potential of tech at the moment. It's just touching the surface, I think.
What's inside the book, Vaughn? How many chapters? What are we talking about specifically? Shall we go through one by one, the chapters?
Well, I can start off with really kind of the beginning. So we have the whole intro about what is actually fashion tech, because, you know, a lot of people don't actually know what it is when I tell them that, you know, this is what I'm working on and, you know, I'm excited about all this technology. And they're like, for fashion? Okay. So then I have to give some examples. So really that is what that first introduction is all about. It's really like, you know, this is what the fashion typical chain is looking like. And then this is what the technologies that exist can do, just in a, you know, overall analysis. And then these are the people that are involved in this whole thing. So we're talking about the stakeholders. So in this case, I mentioned earlier already, the designers of the future, and they are definitely a huge part of this. So actually, in that chapter, I'm talking about my work with IFA Paris, where I have been really hands-on with these students, telling them about all these possibilities. We did cover other things that aren't in the book, like 3D printing and laser cutting. However, we do have just the general knowledge that they needed to learn as well, to just know the full scope of technology. So that is obviously AI, trying out some of the stuff that our startups, when we were working together, were actually working on. And then actually what I did really at some point was to just see, what do they know before we actually start teaching them anything versus afterwards? And actually, yeah, the hypothesis was correct that really they just don't know it yet. And this is not specific to IFA Paris. We've seen that this is also across other schools. Having learned fashion design ourselves as well, Peter and myself, we know that they don't necessarily teach that in a typical fashion design bachelor's or master's, in terms of even business as well, because this is really a huge part of what this whole fashion tech future is all about. You need to kind of know these different sectors, put it together to make it work. But just to kind of look at one of the tables, just a little glimpse into what's in the book, we do have, we kind of had this pie chart where we are looking at what do they know so far, or what have they heard maybe at an internship with a brand, or just in general, mainstream fashion. And actually just looking at the pie chart here, digital fashion was one of the ones they have got an introduction to, with 48.57%. of them saying they had heard of, you know, Clo 3D, those digital design softwares where you have digital garments that can be made into NFTs, etc. But I do think they had heard of that because of us, actually, not because, obviously, I'm not trying to toot our horn here, but this is really the reality that, obviously, I think that is one of the reasons why they came to IFA Paris as well, because this is what we're teaching them. But if we were to ask this maybe before they even heard of IFA Paris, probably wouldn't have heard of it. And I think really to blame, should I say, is that mainstream fashion just isn't doing it that mainstream yet. And if mainstream brands are doing it, it's not necessarily in a mainstream way that they would do their campaigns normally. It's just kind of in the corner, that little thing they might post on LinkedIn, but you're not going to see it on their website or something.
I think it's very interesting from the survey that you did, Von, with your students, is that even though they had thought about technologies in some way, the majority didn't integrate it into their design or creative process in any way yet. And it does, I guess, create the question of, so when are these guys going to get kickstarted? Because at the same time, obviously, when we're speaking to fashion brands, they want to have talent that has these sorts of skills that they are looking for proactively to hire. So I'm just wondering, how do they move on from, okay, fashion design is pen to paper, pattern cutting and twirling on the dummy, which of course is great. There's nothing wrong with that in any way, shape or form. And I think that's what we're trying to say in the book. We're not trying to replace your traditional processes with technology. And this is what we say in chapter one, but it's how do we now take it even further with technology and how can you upskill? And we obviously come back around to this in the conclusion of the book, is you want to really future-proof yourself. It's kind of my key takeaway from the results that you were just talking about. So I guess for any listeners out there, is to get started ASAP with these sorts of things.
Well, yes, most definitely. And I have had some people actually approaching me about how do I get started? And really, there are some online courses happening now. You can go to schools such as Ivy Paris, and there are a few others where I actually studied, Nottingham Trent University, where they are starting to learn Clone 3D, etc. So it's slowly getting there with the education part, and even just mindset. I think just to end on that note, Jean-Baptiste did mention, so the CEO of IFA, he actually mentioned, also quoted in the book, that really the mindset is, you know, traditional is the way to go with fashion. And that's obviously what we're seeing with why brands like Chanel, for example, wouldn't shout about a new technology they're using, because they're known as this, you know, traditional, cool brand. So yeah, really now it's about just trying to change that mindset across the board. So everyone's just open-minded to try something
new. Absolutely. And for our listeners, you can get this book as an ebook, but also as a printed version as well, which we'll go through those details at the end. At the end of each chapter, we also have an activity of some sort, whether that's to check out a specific technology or to reflect on the way that you are working with technologies in your fashion practice. That's the end of every chapter, because we do obviously don't want to just tell you what's happening, but also encourage you as well to adopt some of the technologies, or to just be inspired, explore in some way, shape or form. And as Von mentioned there, both of us are trained in fashion design, more of your traditional processes. So it has been a journey for us, both of us, adopting technologies into our own practices as well, which I guess goes into chapter two, which is called The Next Evolution of Design. The very first question that we ask in that chapter is, can anyone now become a designer? I don't know if your opinion has changed on that recently, Von, or is it still the same?
You know what? I think, because I know in the book what we said about that was, you know, generative AI is really the reason why anyone can become a designer, and some other factors as well. And obviously that means someone who's never been to fashion school can literally sit down, get a design done with AI. And I think that's great, but I still don't think, I'm not sure if this opinion really goes through the, I think I did make that quite clear in the book as well, that it's not too, we still kind of have two then definitions of what a designer is in this case, because I'm thinking of it as, when I think of a designer, yes, I am going to think of it in a very more traditional way, where the individual thinks of the silhouette and all this stuff, colors, everything, all that combination to make this whole collection. And then that is the person who is the designer. But if we're now looking at, dare I say, a shortcut version where we have this AI pretty much kind of doing everything for you, that's where now we are turning into a, I guess, just a new type of designer. But I would say that not necessarily this designer is, like, anyone can necessarily be a designer, but it just depends which definition we're using for it. or which explanation we're using for what a designer is.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Maybe I would paraphrase, not necessarily a shortcut, but I think everyone now can be inspired to create their own products using technology, which generative AI does allow you to do very easily. If we look in the example of T Fashion, which is one of the case studies in the book, you just need to type in some prompts. So for example, long dress, summer 2024 with floral patterns, and it needs to have a frilly hem, and it will give you some variations for some ideas in some way, which is great. And obviously that's great for quick visualization, but yes, it doesn't necessarily help you to design the entire spectrum of what I guess you and I would classify as design, shall we say. I think it's very exciting though that a new technology such as AI is reconfiguring the way we think about design and what it does mean to be a designer. I think, I guess it's more about the debate that we're having there. I know that you tried some of those tools. What have any been your favorites from a design perspective?
Yeah, so I have tried, obviously, like DC Suite, which is a digital design software. That one is actually what we are comparing as well on there. Not necessarily that specific software, but a 3D digital design software versus, you know, like generative AI. And what I've one of the main points that we are saying, obviously, is that, you know, it is there are very different processes. One is a lot more than the other, which obviously you can discover in the book. And I think what I would prefer definitely is the 3D digital design software route, just because I do get to really just design whatever is in my head. With AI, though, I still do like it, actually. You know, as much as I can say, oh, maybe it's a shortcut, there are a lot of things you still need to consider, like with the prompts. You still have to actually be accurate with the way that you're describing the garment that you're trying to create. And you can actually get a lot more ideas than maybe what you initially had. So it is quite interesting in on both ends. But I do still think that 3D digital design software makes sense. It's just that now we have the pattern cutting thing, which is another story that is involved in that process.
I've always said this, you know, when we met, Vaughn, is that when I was starting digital fashion, in the late 2000s, we were still very much the geeks in the corner. And this is, the kind of sentiment that I do put across in the parts that I've written in the book as well. We were geeks in the corner tinkering away with digital fashion, and it's no longer the case, which I'm very happy to see that it has progressed. And I think one of the sentiments that we have in the book as well is that progression element, and I think that's very important. What we're talking about in the book is 2022 to 2023 in terms of technology. A lot of these technologies are going to progress so much more in the next 2 to 5 years anyway. So we're going to have to do a second edition, I think, Vaughn, to be able to keep up to date anyway from that perspective. One of the things that I liked in the book are we do actually feature interviews with industry professionals, and in chapter two we call them the insider perspective, and in chapter two we have an interview with John Lau, who is the Dean of Academic Strategy at London College of Fashion, and he talked about what fashion designers need to learn for competitive advantage. So going back to our earlier point, and actually what we talked about in chapter one, it's about how do you make yourself that a little bit more employable. We know that there's not enough fashion design jobs out there anyway, and we know that it's very difficult to get your own fashion brand onto the market, which and both, you know, both you and I, Vaughn, have been in that place, and I think you are still in that place with your fashion brand as well. It's just incredibly difficult. So it's about how do you always turbo charge yourself with new skills.
But I know another thing as well that we speak about in the next chapter is also the fact that it's not just the visuals, but it's also the physical elements of what a garment is made from. because obviously we're talking about digital tech a lot, but we also have the actual physical fabrics, biomaterials that can be used to also innovate a fashion brand. I know that you that was one of your main focuses. Can you take us through that section?
Yeah, so chapter three is called Production and the Connected Supply Chain. One of those parts that I'm talking about in the chapter is about biofabrication. And we have the case study of Altmat with Sheikha. It's based out in India. And what she's done is she's basically made a biorefinery that creates fabrics that are suitable for clothing made out of agricultural waste. So, for example, from your crops of wheat or sweet corn or whatever, you have all of these leaves that normally just get thrown away or put into a landfill. And essentially what Altmat does is it takes all of that waste, it puts it into a vat of chemicals, and it turns that into liquid that can then be solidified and turned into usable fibers, spun into then yarns, and then eventually into fabrics. And I think that is super exciting. She's currently doing some pilots and tests with some very big fashion brands. And I think we are at the very beginning points of new material innovations, such as Alma, into mainstream fashion. However, the downside to that is that it's still very costly to do this type of fabrication for fashion. And not all fashion brands actually have yet warmed up to the idea of biofabrics, either for cost purposes, for aesthetics and design purposes, or just because they just don't want to, basically, because it's just something extra for them to think about and to explore. I'm not saying that obviously you and I agree, Vom, but it's just the way the industry currently is. And I think that's one of the things that we also want to get across in the book as well is, okay, it might seem difficult right now. It might seem that there's a very long distance for brands to go to get to that next stage. Both you and I agree that it's actually needed to make that happen.
Most definitely, yeah, because there are more factors than just, oh, let's, you know, have this greenwashing of a marketing strategy just to say that we're sustainable. But actually, there are factors like the actual planet that do need, that are kind of, are determined by those actions that are being taken in the fashion industry, yeah. And I guess that's also why other technologies that are linked to that, so that we're kind of going back to the digital side, but linking it with those types of biomaterials is what we speak about in terms of looking at like digital passports, for example, seeing that journey of the fabric, how it was made from start to finish, having that accountability and traceability as well as a customer, but also as the person, you know, actually purchasing these fabrics for your brand.
What was your favorite technology in chapter three that we talked about?
So we specifically spoke about a what they call a spectrometer by the company called Aware. And what they do really is that they have this special powder. It's like a magic dust that they put into a the fibers just, you know, in the production of a fabric. And that is usually done by a fabric mill that is associated with this company. So in this case, that's where you are now a brand who is working with that fabric mill is able to know that this is really a sustainable fabric. They know exactly the way that it has been created, and it is then attached to the blockchain. So in this case, this digital passport that you get right at the end of that whole process is pretty much just a spectrometer that you would have scanned onto the final garment that then kind of shows you this timeline reel of how it actually got from start to finish, pretty much. So it might sound a little confusing at the moment, but this basically just what you can take away is that this little powder is the reason why you can detect that this fabric is made by this certified sustainable fabric mill that is associated with Aware. And that is how you get that digital passport.
On the note of confusion, the book is filled with a lot of images and diagrams. So hopefully what Vonna has just talked about will be less confusing once you see the images in the book. And I recommend, yes, buying the printed version just because everything looks nicer in printed versions, basically.
It does. You have to buy in order to see what we're talking about. That way it won't be gibberish.
Exactly. So the second half of the book is all about the downstream phase of fashion. So chapter 4 is called Marketing Beyond Physical Realities. I know that Vaughn, I think part of the writing process, maybe this was maybe the side that we found more fun, shall we say, in terms of writing, just because it is so literal. There's just so much to talk about. There's already a lot out there as well, and it's a lot easier to understand. We talk a lot there about augmented reality in chapter 4, for example. I know that you tried out some technologies for chapter 4, and you can actually see photos of Vaughn trying to on various digital garments via filters inside the book. What was your favorite there?
It's quite difficult because I like the different technologies for different reasons. But I think what I really enjoyed was what I did with my own brand, which was the augmented reality captures. And that was pretty much, it was nice seeing actually just the process of how that is actually made, but also just seeing how you can really immerse yourself on your own phone is really interesting. So again, you'll need to buy the book to have a look at that, or you can also just go on my website. But really what that is about is how you can take this image of a physical garment that already exists. So this is where we start kind of comparing the different technologies all together, because earlier we spoke about how you have to create a digital garment from scratch, maybe with patterns or maybe with AI. But now we've actually moved on specifically to something that already exists, a physical garment that's already been made. And now you're capturing that, putting it back into digital. And what we're doing there is that we're going to have a camera on your phone, obviously, that is activated, and you're able to use those as just like you would with any filters on Instagram, Snapchat, etc. But the difference with this one is that it is really about the promotion of the garments. You're able to look into them in more detail. We're able to interact with the customers more. And Elena, who was my main point of contact at Capacity, which was the company I partnered with, her point was really this is not about just trying to sell the items, but actually also just engagement. That time that the customer is spending looking at these items is just as important as also all the other technologies and all the other reasons that they exist as well. So yeah, I know you tried some AR as well.
I did. I think to that point though, with your brand specifically, where it is dealing with adaptive fashion and you have to be able to understand how to get in and out of the garment, how the zips, you know, unzip, shall we say, because I remember one of the ones that you did, it shows the person or the viewer how to unzip at the shoulder, I think it was. And I think just, you know, obviously a static image, you would never be able to show that at all.
Oh yeah, exactly. I think I'm glad you touched up on that point, because that's again something that Eleanor was talking about. When you compare that time that's being spent, the customer is able to really look into those details. Normally fine on some websites or some brands, you have an image or video of what a feature like that may be like. But here you get to kind of control it, because at the tap of your own fingers, you know, kind of scrolling, you actually are maneuvering that model that's there. So in this case, you're able to then really get into it as if you're kind of, you know, in the store as well. So it's really just trying to mirror what you can get in real life in the digital world as much as possible. And that's almost as close as you can get. Obviously, we have VR, but that's now a completely different thing, because that's now, you're just not going to get the same thing. And not everyone has a virtual reality, Oculus Quest at home. But at least with AR, that's one of the reasons why it's my favorites, because it's super accessible as well for everyone to be able to see.
Yeah. And obviously there we talk about a case study that has a useful case study and you've been able to implement. One of the things that I liked in chapter four, we have the insider perspective from Matthew Drinkwater, who is the head of the Fashion Innovation Agency, part of LCF in London. And he talks about how to build immersive brand experiences and virtual worlds. And I just remember sitting down with him during the interviews and he was going, yeah, when we first started like 10 years ago, brands struggled so much to get their heads around how do you build a visual virtual world? And it's not necessarily that easy either. Technically, you can't just, you know, click a button and then your outcome's a virtual world. And I think that's very interesting as well to understand what are the challenges of, for example, doing something like capacity, or it could be another piece of AR technology. But what he does allude to is that we are going to be experiencing more virtual worlds because brands see that it is engaging with, because as you were saying, the engagement is just different. And we're going to see more virtuals coming to life, I think, in 2024. One of the notions that we talk about in the book is multiverse marketing. And it's about how do you connect all of these different virtual worlds as a brand, either it's shoppable or not shoppable, but it's allowing you to engage with the brand in a certain way, which I think is going to be more prevalent because customers don't necessarily just want to be scrolling and scrolling on product display pages. They want to engage with brands in a different way. And especially some of those customers that do spend all day on their telephones, it's just a new way of engaging. I think that's one of my favorite things that we talk about inside the book. Another favorite moment in the book as well is when we interview Jonathan Chippendale from Helition, who is a digital agency based in London, and how he talks about when he did the Dunhill show, fashion show, the viewer sat next to him was quietly weeping because she found the whole experience so beautiful, the virtual world that was creative. And I think even though we are talking about technology, that's just a means to an end to make the feel, the viewer or the audience or the customer feel something. And the fact that how he remembers that moment so vividly in the work that he was doing shows that fashion can have a huge impact in anyone's life at a psychological level as well. Obviously, from your perspective, when you're doing at a physical level with adaptive fashion, but I imagine that has effect on them psychologically as well, your customers.
Yeah, most definitely. Really with that market is, you know, individuals with disabilities who are not normally catered for in the industry. And in this case, we mean obviously garments that are super uncomfortable for someone who's in a wheelchair all day, for example, or, you know, if someone has a missing limb and they don't use a prosthetic limb, then obviously they don't need the full length of a trouser or the sleeve. So in this case, it's about how can then this technology also cater to them in a way that can hopefully complement the clothing in this case. So in this case, the clothing can be adapted to those different abilities. So can the technology, you know, marry with that design in order to showcase the full scope of what's possible? And this is actually one of the things that we do talk about in the conclusion about really we need to just make all this technology make sense with today's day in terms of inclusivity as well. And that obviously comes with the physical technology as well, not just the AR and AI. But one of the things that we do speak about is obviously like body scanners, for example. How can those things also be in a position where they can accommodate these different abilities? Because at the moment, there is a standard way of maybe, you know, standing in order to have this full scan around you for an able-bodied person. But if someone is sitting in a wheelchair, they might not be able to get their measurement. Not even might not. They won't be able to get their measurements, actually, because the technology is just not designed for that. So how can we really move past that? So we are also, you know, making that innovation a lot more purposeful as well, not just, hey, we have this shiny technology. that leads us really to the next chapter about, or the final chapter before the conclusion, where we are focusing on the retail experiences. And it's really smart retail and the stores of the future. That's what we've named that. I don't know if you have kind of a favorite moment on that chapter specifically.
For me, it goes back to before I had Beyond Four, the Dandy Lab, and we were looking at stores of the future with that specific business. It just brings me back to those days where everyone was talking about retail tech. 2013, 2014, retail tech was very much at the forefront. So it was very nice to revisit that. For anyone that is listening to the audio version of this, not the video version, you can just sense Ron's passion specifically. You can just tell specifically with the adaptive fashion element. That's like one of your passions. So you need to see Ron's passion for that point. But going back to the retail side of things, that whole notion of fits is something that I hear about pretty much every week. Whenever we meet a startup or a founder, everybody wants to try to address fit issues. Then theoretically, you should reduce return rates as well if products fit you properly when you're doing online shopping. What we say in the book, though, is that it's still incredibly difficult to solve as a challenge for the fashion industry. But there are some very good solutions out there at the moment. We talk about Treedies in the book. We talk about Shoe Fitter in the book for the footwear side of things. We talk about Hanif as well and Fitmatch with Rihanna's brand Fenty, and I know that you interviewed Hanif there for that specific case study. But there's just so much happening there, and I think that notion of fit is very important. And going back to your point earlier, you know, all of our bodies are just different, so why are brands making clothing to such standard sizes all the time that just don't fit all of these different body types?
I completely agree. I think that's one thing that is still very backward or very traditional and conventional about the fashion industry, that I'm not sure if we're ever going to see change in terms of a very mainstream scope. But obviously some brands like mine, but also some others, are doing, you know, made to measure or made to order, etc. But that doesn't completely eradicate the problem of this standardization that still exists in fashion, which, you know, if we spoke about disability and able-bodied, but then even if you're looking at just able-bodied, like you said, we're all very different. So surely we should have something a little bit more, you know, we should have pushed at some point by now. But maybe this technology could be the start of that, because like what we're saying with all the fit tech that you've just mentioned there, that they could actually be the start of that, because the idea is that they give you these measurements or give the... It's like a whole database now of measurements from customers that can be made available to these brands. So now they can also see, you know, their average customer size and maybe do something with that, you know. There are many solutions that can come from this, but really I think we have to go back to that idea of mindset of the brands. But we also have to be realistic, I guess, because it can be expensive trying to accommodate all the customers that are different, even the mainstream brands. It's quite a task, but they just have to be willing, because there's a lot of potential, especially with this technology.
Absolutely. And on that key word, I guess, of willing, our final chapter, chapter 6, the conclusion chapter, is called Minimum Effort, Maximum Output. We put a lot of effort into this book. Hopefully there'll be a lot of output for our readers. In this conclusion, we do round up everything that we have talked about in the fashion value chain, and then of course all of the technologies as well. What do you think should be the key takeaway for our readers?
Well, I think one of the interesting things that we did do there is just rounding up, you know, what we think is really the future. Like we've basically listed all these technologies and different ways of using them throughout the book. And now at the end, we are really just talking about, okay, fantastic, but these are the ones we do really believe in. And they're not any different from actually what we have written before that. It's really just looking at the technologies in the different scenarios and pinpointing those. So I'll let you guys take the book and read that for yourselves. But really, I think that's one of the main takeaways, that yes, we have all this scope of different technologies, but some of them are a little bit more like must-haves compared to some that are just nice to have, basically.
We started the book with a question. We finished the book with a question, which is, what happens next? And I guess that's the question for our listeners. What happens next is you buy the book, I guess. Shameless plug, a plug for the book. Yeah, I completely agree with everything that you said there. One of the key phrases that we also put in chapter six is that relevancy is real. And obviously, during the COVID pandemic era, we did see a lot of fashion brands go bankrupt because they weren't able to keep that competitive advantage. And technology is one way of being able to keep up to speed with your customers, with the general market, and so forth. So yeah, so there you have it. That is the book, Fashion Tech Applied. Vaughn, how do they buy it?
So guys, it is available on your Amazon and many other platforms, but we will send a link or put the link on the description of this podcast. And yeah, you can purchase it there. We do have some discount codes for you. So don't you worry about that, but you only see that if you go into the description box. And yeah, you can also just reach out to us as well. Tell us your thoughts about the book on LinkedIn. We're going to be talking about this a lot on there. But even Instagram, TikTok, whatever it is.
How big is the discount? I think a lot of people want to know that, Vaughn.
Yes, so we do have actually 20% off. So you will have a very nice chunk taken away just for listening to this podcast and being able to get into the description to get that discount code.
Thank you so much for your time, Vaughn. It's great to have you back on a show talking with me again.
Yeah. It's been a while that we've been on a show together, but it has been really fun and really just talking about something that we've really put our hearts into.
Blood, sweat and tears into this book for the last 18 months.
Exactly. But honestly, it's here, guys. For those watching, this is it. We finally have it. But yeah, no, honestly, I remember getting this through the post and I was just like, oh my gosh, it's
quite nice when you get the physical copy and it's there in your hands and you're like, oh, this is what Vaughn and I have been laboring over the last year and a half over, but it's very nice. What is one word that you would use to describe the journey of writing a book, Vaughn?
Definitely tiresome, but not necessarily in a bad way. Because I know that sounds quite negative, but it is tiring to write a book. I've heard even other authors talk about that journey, that at the beginning it could be like, yeah, and then at some point it just never ends. but once it is there, it's super rewarding. Like it's and I think what we have written, we're super happy with as well. I think that's also what just really makes this whole journey just fantastic.
Yeah, and going through the
what's your words?
All of that editing process with how many editors did we have? It's like four editors that we had working with us. My word would be, for me, it's rewarding to be able to put down into paper all of the work that you and I have been doing over the last few years would be my word, I think. But yes, tiring as well is a word I would agree with, because you just have to push through it even if you don't feel like writing.
Exactly. No, but I'm so glad we did it, honestly, because it, like you said, it really just captured all of it, all of what we've been doing, really. So enjoy the reading, guys.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to click follow to keep up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like this episode, please give us a review. If you want us to feature a specific theme or guest, please give us a message at beyondform.io. I will see you very soon.